And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West, the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's April 26th, 116th day of the year. 249 days remain till the end of the year. On this day in history, in 1336, Francisco Petrarch ascends Mont Ventoux. 1478, the Pazzi family attack Lorenzo de' Medici and kill his brother Giuliano during High Mass in Florence Cathedral. There's no place sacred. 1564, playwright William Shakespeare is baptized in Stratford-upon-Avon in Warwickshire, in England. His actual date of birth is not known. 1607, the Virginia Company Commons make landfall at Cape Henry. 1721, a massive earthquake devastates the Iranian city of Tabriz. 1777, Sybil Ludington, 16 years old, rode 40 miles to alert American colonial forces to the approach of the British regular forces. 1794, Battle of Beaumont during the Flanders Campaign of the War of the First Coalition. 1802, Napoleon Bonaparte signs a general amnesty to allow all but 1,000 of the most notorious emigres of the French Revolution to come back to France. 1803, thousands of meteor fragments fall from the skies of L'Aiguille in France. The event convinces European scientists that meteors do exist. It used to be said that there was no way rocks fell from the sky because there were no rocks in the sky. 1805, First Barbary War. U.S. Marines capture Derna under the command of First Lieutenant Presley O'Banion. 1865, Union cavalry troops corner and shoot dead John Wilkes Booth, allegedly, assassin of President Lincoln in Virginia. There is another story that was one of his co-conspirators who was shot, that he actually escaped and eventually died in Oklahoma, I think it was. 1903, Atletico Madrid Association Football Club is founded. 1923, Duke of York weds Lady Elizabeth Bowes Leon at Westminster Abbey. 1925, Paul von Hindenburg defeats Wilhelm Marx in the second round of the German presidential election to become the first directly elected head of state of the Weimar Republic. 1933, the Gestapo, the official secret police force of Nazi Germany, is established. 1937, Spanish Civil War. Guernica, Spain is bombed by the German Luftwaffe. 1942, Benihu cholera accident in Manchukuo leaves 1,549 Chinese miners dead. 1943, the Easter riots break out in Uppsala in Sweden. 1944, Georgios Papandreou becomes head of the Greek government in exile based in Egypt. 1944, Heinrich Krip is captured by Allied commandos in occupied Crete. Now, for those who are not familiar with that name, he was a German career soldier, served in both World War I and World War II. While leading German forces in occupied Crete in April of 1944, he was abducted by British SOE officers with the support of the Cretan resistance. He actually died in 1976 back in Germany. But he was quite the activist. Okay. 1945, World War II. Battle of Bautzen, last successful German tank offensive of the war and the last noteworthy victory of the Wehrmacht. 1945, Filipino troops of the 66th Infantry Regiment, Philippine Commonwealth Army, and the American troops of the 33rd and 37th Infantry Division are liberated in Bulgaria and they fight against the Japanese forces under General Tomoyuki Yamashita. 1954... Okay, 1954, the Geneva Conference, an effort to restore peace in Indochina and Korea begins. 1956, SS Ideal X the world's first successful container ship, leaves Port Newark, New Jersey for Houston, Texas. 1958, final run of the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad's Royal Blue from Washington, D.C. to New York City. It's been running for 68 years. That was the first U.S. passenger train to use electric locomotives. 1960, forced out by the April Revolution, President of South Korea, Syngman Rhee, resigns after 12 years of dictatorial rule. 1962, NASA's Ranger 4 spacecraft crashes into the moon. 1963, in Libya, amendments to the Constitution transform Libya into one national unity, Kingdom of Libya, and allows for female participation in elections. 1964, Tanganyika and Zanzibar merged to form Tanzania. 1966, the magnitude 5.1 Tashkent earthquake affects the largest city in Soviet Central Asia with a maximum intensity of 7, which is considered very strong. Tashkent is almost destroyed and 15 to 200 people are killed, depending on which count you look at. 1966, a new government is formed in the Republic of the Congo, led by Ambroise Numazalele. 1970, the convention establishing the World Intellectual Property Organization enters into force. 1981, Dr. Michael Harrison, University of California, San Francisco Medical Center, performs the world's first human open fetal surgery. 1982, 57 people are killed by former police officer Woo Bum Khan in a shooting spree in South Gyeongsang Province in South Korea. 1986, the Chernobyl disaster occurs in the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic. 1989, the deadliest known tornado strikes central Bangladesh, kills almost 1,300, injures 12,000, leaving as many as 80,000 homeless. 1989, People's Daily publishes the April 26 editorial which inflames the nascent Tiananmen Square protest. 1991, 55 tornadoes break out in the central U.S. Before the outbreaks end, Andover, Kansas would record the year's only F5 tornado. 1994, China Airlines Flight 140 crashes in Nagoya Airport in Japan, kills 264 of the 271 people on board. 2002, Robert Stauffenhauser kills 16 at Gutenberg Gymnasium in Erfurt, Germany before dying of a self-inflicted gunshot. 2005, under international pressure, Syria withdraws the last of its 14,000 troop military garrison in Lebanon, ending its 29-year military domination of that country. 2018, American comedian Bill Cosby is found guilty of sexual assault. And in 2019, Marvel Studios' film Avengers Endgame is released, becoming the highest-grossing film of all time, surpassing the previous box office record of Avatar. Well, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays observances. Chernobyl disaster-related observances include the Day of Remembrance of the Chernobyl tragedy in Belarus, Memorial Day of Radiation Accidents and Catastrophes in Russia, Christian Feast Day, Aldo Brandesca, Frank of Visalta, Lucidius of Verona, Our Lady of Good Counsel, Pope Anacletus and Marcellinus, Riquier, Tassilius Radbertus, Peter of Rates, Robert Hunt in the Episcopal Church in the U.S., Stephen of Perm, Trudpert, Confederate Memorial Day in Florida, Union Day in Tanzania, and World Intellectual Property Day internationally. Let's see what else we might have. Paolo Orsini replaces his brother, Pope Stephen II, as Pope Paul I. 1220, German King Frederick II grants bishops sovereign rights. 1336, Italian Renaissance poet Francesco Petrarch climbs Mount Ventoux, which we've already talked about. 1467, a miraculous image of Our Lady of Good Counsel appearing in Genazzano, Italy. 1514, Copernicus makes his first observation of Saturn. 1654, Jews are expelled from Brazil. Brazil had an emperor at that point in time. Um, 1655, Dutch West Indies Company denies Peter Stuyvesant's desire to exclude Jews from New Amsterdam, which became New York. 1677, Emperor Leopold I forms the University of Innsbruck. 1755, the first Russian university opens in Moscow. 1814, King Louis the 18th lands at Calais from England. 1828, Russia declares war on Turkey to support Greek independence. 1853, the Dutch King, William III, disbands the Second Chamber. 1859 was the first time temporary insanity defense was used successfully in the U.S. Dan Sickles is acquitted of murder on the grounds he was temporarily insane. 1865, Confederate General Joseph E. Johnston surrenders remaining forces to Union General Sherman at Bennett Place in Durham, North Carolina, which end the U.S. Civil War. However, there were still operational Confederate forces in the West. 1887, the Huntsville Electric Company forms to sell electricity. 1893, the first Cleveland Board of Park Commissioners forms. 1904, Bell Telephone Company of Antwerp, Belgium is formed. 1904, General Kuroko leads the Japanese army against the Russian force at the Yalu River during the Russo-Japanese War. 1906, motion pictures begin regularly showing at the Orpheum Theater in Honolulu, Hawaii. 1907, the Jamestown, Virginia Tercentenary Exposition opens. 1913, Sun Yat-sen calls for revolt against President Yuan Sakai in China. 1915, Italy secretly signs the Treaty of London with Britain, France, and Russia, bringing Italy into World War I on the Allied side. 1920, Harold Shapley and Herbert Curtis hold a great debate on the nature of nebulae, galaxies, and size of the universe at the U.S. National Academy of Sciences in Washington. 1925, artist Diego Rivera resigns from the Mexican Communist Party. 1928, Madame Tussauds Waxworks exhibition reopens in London after a great fire. 1941, potatoes are rationed in Holland. 1944, the first B-29 was attacked by Japanese fighters. One fighter was shot down. 1945, Marshal Philippe Pétain, leader of the France's Vichy collaborationist regime during World War II, is arrested for treason. 1952, the U.S. minesweeper Hobson rams aircraft carrier the Wasp. 176 are killed. 1954, on this date, mass trials of Jonas Salk's anti-polio vaccine begins. The first shot was delivered in Fairfax County, Virginia. More than 443 children get shots over 3 months. 1954, USSR Supreme Soviet transferred the Crimean Oblast from Russia to Ukraine. 1961, the French paratroopers' revolt is suppressed in Algeria. 1962, Ranger 4 crash lands on the dark side of the moon. 1967, KSPS-TV Channel 7 in Spokane, Washington begins broadcasting. 1967, San Marco 2 launch, the first equatorial launch of a craft into space. 1968, students seize the administration building in Ohio State. 1971, the heaviest rains in history in Bahia District of Brazil, 15 inches in 24 hours. 1971, in Turkey, a state of siege was proclaimed. 1976, Pan Am begins nonstop flights from New York City to Tokyo. In 1977, the opening of Studio 54, one of the best-known nightclubs in the country. That took place in New York City. 1978, France sends troops to the country of Chad. 1980, Iran begins scattering the U.S. hostages they kidnapped at the U.S. Embassy. 1982, Argentina surrenders to Great Britain on South Georgia Island near the Falkland Islands. 1982, Rod Stewart is mugged and a gunman steals his $50,000 Porsche on Hollywood Boulevard. 1986, the world's worst nuclear disaster. The fourth reactor at Chernobyl explodes. 31 die. Radioactive contamination reaches much of Western Europe. 1990, 126 die in a 6.9 earthquake in China. 1992, for those of you who are fanatics about TV, Growing Pains had its final episode on ABC TV on this date in history. 1992, TV show Who's the Boss had its final episode. It was on 8 years on ABC. Unfortunately, Alyssa Milano began to believe she was God's gift to the world. 1993, STS-55, the Space Shuttle Columbia, launches into orbit. 1994, Taiwan Airbus A300 crashes in Nagoya, Japan. 262 are killed. 2019, six suspected militants connected to Sri Lankan terror attacks killed along with 10 others in a shootout with police in Santa Maruthu. And on this date in 1983, the forensic tests on Hitler's diary show that they were a hoax. Well, I think we've come to the end of this particular history session. Let's go to talking about the paranormal. You know, medieval Europe had a long tradition of belief in ghosts. It's derived from pagan, Jewish, and early Christian stories. Now, that year, they were skeptics. One of the Catholic Church's most important theologians, St. Augustine of Hippo, who was later declared a doctor of the church, whatever that might mean, firmly rejected the belief that spirits of the dead could haunt the living. However, belief that ghosts existed and haunted the living was much more common in Catholic Europe. Constantinus of Lyon published a biography of Bishop Germanus of Auxerre that included a ghost story. According to Constantinus, while traveling, Germanus and several companions state a house the locals believed was haunted. And a ghost appeared in a group and claimed it had haunted the house because its corpse had been properly buried. And then the ghost was said to have led Germanus and his companions to the spot where the bones lay. Following morning, Germanus and his companions exhumed and reburied the ghost bones. And several ghost stories appeared in Pope Gregory I's Dialogues, written at the end of the 6th century. These included the story of a priest tormented by an evil spirit and a tale of two sharp-tongued nuns whose ghost haunted their former church. And according to Gregory, ghostly encounters weren't always bad. In one instance, the ghost of a recently deceased priest prevented a thief from escaping a churchyard with a stolen sheep. Now, Europeans were far from unique in the beliefs about ghosts during the medieval period. One of the best-known works of literature was, of course, with 1001 Nights, which I talked about in the last show. This work demonstrated the popularity of ghost stories around the globe. Enthusiasm for ghosts grew during the Renaissance. Even William Shakespeare made extensive use of ghosts in several of his plays. The play Richard III, written sometime between 1592 and 1594, the tyrant king is haunted by the ghost of his many victims on the night before the Battle of Bosworth Field. In Julius Caesar, written in 1599, The title character returns to haunt his murderer, Brutus, on the night before the Battle of Philippi. As in Richard III, the ghost accurately forecast the murderer's defeat and death. In Hamlet, which was first performed in 1600, the ghost of Hamlet's murdered father appears and asks his son to avenge his death. And that sets into motion the play's blood-soaked action. Ghosts also play a key role in Macbeth, which took place in 1606. There, Macbeth orders his friends Banquo's murder and is in turn haunted by Banquo's ghost. Though Shakespeare's ghosts are today the most famous, they weren't the only ghosts to appear in plays at that time. Thomas Kidd's The Spanish Tragedy, written sometime between 1587 and 1591, and Cyril Turnau's The Atheist Tragedy in 1611 are just two examples among many of the Renaissance plays that use ghost in the plot line. Now, one reason for the proliferation of ghost stories on the English stage during this time is that ghost sightings are common during this period. Henry VIII's wives, Anne Boleyn and Catherine Howard, were perhaps the best known. They were believed to haunt the Tower of London, the site of their executions. Allegedly, they also haunted Hever Castle and Hampton Court, respectively. Fascination with ghosts continued into the Elizabethan era in the early 17th century. Sir Walter Raleigh, executed in 1618, is widely believed to haunt Sherborne Old Castle. Several people reported seeing Queen Elizabeth I's ghost in Windsor Castle's library. And despite the numerous reports of ghost sightings in England, some English remain skeptical. Noted 18th century English author Samuel Johnson, in discussing the popular belief in ghosts, once made the remark, "It's undecided whether or not there's ever been an instance of the spirit of any person appearing after death. All argument is against it, but all belief is for it." And European colonists carried the beliefs and affinity for ghosts with them when they settled in North America. Washington Irving drew upon the German, Irish, and Scandinavian folklore in creating the terrifying Headless Horseman in his short story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, in 1820. Stover Witch's Ghost, Haunting a Family in What's Now Adams, Tennessee, from 1817 to 1821, was published throughout the country in books and newspapers. We're talking, of course, about the Bell Witch. Though published ghost stories were popular in the 19th century, many more were made popular by word of mouth. Reports of a ghost known as the Gray Man on Pawley's Island in South Carolina go back to 1822, when that spirit allegedly warned people a severe storm was coming. And it's been sighted as recently as 2018, right before Hurricane Florence. Beginning in the early 19th century, people living near Sayre, Pennsylvania, claimed to see ghosts of Iroquois villagers brutally killed by Hartley's additional Continental Regiment in 1778. According to legend, the Iroquois villagers' queen, Esther, cursed the American infantrymen shortly before they lynched her. And some later visitors to the area claimed to have seen a weeping woman hanging from a tree. Ghostly encounters weren't limited to areas settled by the English, though. For centuries, people in St. Augustine, Florida, have claimed to see the ghost of Pedro Benedict. Perretina, colonial governor of Spanish Florida between 1651 and 1654. And tales of ghosts of well-known American figures have also become popular over the centuries. There's stories of a haunting by one of America's founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin. Since in the late 19th century, Franklin's ghost is seen at the library of the American Philosophical Society in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Some reports held that the toga-clad statue of Franklin's in the library comes to life and dances in the streets. Though many ghost sightings have been reported in the White House in Washington over the years, maybe no political figures made it so frequent an appearance in the afterlife as Abraham Lincoln. Assassin's bullet in April of 1865. Of course, there's another story that while he was severely wounded, he did recover and take himself off to Texas to get away from his wife. Lincoln, who was formerly a lawyer and congressman of Illinois, said to have been seen wandering near the old Springfield Capitol building, as well as his nearby law offices. The White House, everybody from first ladies to queens to prime ministers, reported seeing the ghost or feeling the presence of Abe, particularly during the administration of Franklin Roosevelt, another president who guided the country through a time of great upheaval and war. You know, some locations simply seem to lend themselves to hauntings, maybe due to the dramatic or grisly events that occurred there in the past. Over the centuries, sighting of spectral soldiers have been reported on famous battle sites, including the bloody Civil War battlefield of Gettysburg, the Alamo in Texas, and Fort William Henry at Lake George, New York. Among major cities, New York City is especially rich with ghost stories. The spirit of Peter Stuyvesant, the city's last Dutch colonial governor, has been seen stomping around the East Village on his wooden leg since shortly after his death in 1672. Mark Twain's believed to haunt the stairwell of his one-time village apartment building, while the ghost of poet Dylan Thomas is said to sometimes occupy his usual corner table at the West Village's White Horse Tavern, where he reportedly drank a fatal amount of scotch in 1953. And maybe the most famous New York ghost is that of Aaron Burr, who served as vice president of Thomas Jefferson, but is best known for killing Alexander Hamilton in a duel in 1804. Burr's ghost is said to roam the streets of his old neighborhood. His spectral activities focus primarily on one restaurant, one if by land, two if by sea, which is located in a Barra Street building and claims that it was once Burr's carriage house. You know, the reports of hauntings have been around since colonial times, and frankly, even much earlier. The number of ghost sightings in allegedly haunted places in the U.S. grew substantially in the mid-19th century. Of course, part of this can be attributed to the popularity of spiritualism, a movement that emerged in western New York as part of the outburst of religious enthusiasm known as the Second Great Awakening. On March 31st, 1848, sisters Kate and Margaret Fox announced they'd contacted the spirit of a person allegedly murdered in their house. Now, no record of any murder was ever found, and decades later the women briefly recanted this declaration. This led to a proliferation of individuals who claimed to be able to commune with the dead, partially due to the fact that people were willing to pay handsomely to contact dead relatives and friends. During Abraham Lincoln's presidency, First Lady Mary Todd Lincoln turned to a group of mediums to try and contact her son Willie, who died in the White House in February of 1862 of typhoid fever. Between 1884 and 1887, a committee of faculty members at the University of Pennsylvania investigated various spiritualists' supposed ability to commune with the dead. Though funded by an endowment from ardent spiritualist Henry Seibert, in all instances, the faculty dismissed the spiritualist claims as fraudulent. Now, the Seibert Committee's report did little to dent spiritualism's popularity, though. In fact, spiritualism continued to boom during and after World War I, when the unprecedented carnage meant millions of family members were willing to pay for the chance to speak to loved ones killed in battle. Spiritualism claimed several famous adherents, including author Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who created Sherlock Holmes, Professor Challenger. And during the 1920s, a number of institutions were established to offer instruction in spiritualist techniques. Today, organizations like the National Spiritualist Association of Churches continue to promote the science, philosophy, and religion of continuous life based on the demonstrated fact of communication by means of mediumship with those who live in the spirit world. Naturally, the millennia-long fascination with ghosts and the many accounts of spectral sightings have inspired people to investigate. In 1862, a group of British men founded the Ghost Club, generally thought to be the oldest paranormal investigating society, and it's still in existence. Its members included authors Charles Dickens and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Another important organization dedicated to investigating paranormal and psychic phenomena, the Society for Psychical Research, was founded in London in 1882. Several prominent individuals, including British Prime Minister Arthur Balfour and Father of American Psychology, William James, have served as that organization's president. Now, the Society for Psychical Research, known as SPR, has investigated claims of paranormal and psychic activity using traditional scientific methods and debunked several fraudulent claims. One of the members, Harry Price, became the world's first celebrity paranormal investigator. He was a member of the Magic Circle, an exclusive British organization of stage magicians, used his knowledge of sleight of hand and illusionism to investigate claims of paranormal activity. In 1922, Price and a group of other SPR investigators exposed spirit photographer William Hope as a fraud, and 3 years later demonstrated that medium Maria Silbert used her feet to create what she alleged were sounds of ghosts. 1931, Price and his SPR colleagues demonstrated Scottish medium Helen Duncan, who famously produced ectoplasm, was a fraud right before a seance. Duncan swallowed cheesecloth, which she regurgitated in front of her audience. 1952, American paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren founded a New England Society for Psychic Research. They won considerable notoriety for their investigations, including the so-called Amityville Horror case, though many have been dismissed by skeptics and other paranormal investigators as hoaxes. The Warren's nephew, John Zaffis, who also established himself as a paranormal investigator, the self-styled godfather of the paranormal, Zaffis administers the Museum of the Paranormal, been featured on several television programs, including Unsolved Mysteries and Haunted Collector. Maybe the best-known contemporary American paranormal investigators are Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson, founders of the Atlantic Paranormal Society, or TAPS, and subject of the long-running Ghost Hunters TV show. Ghost Hunters' popularity spurred public fascination with the paranormal and sparked the founding of dozens of investigatory organizations similar to TAPS and several other TV programs, such as Ghost Adventures and The Paranormal State. Contemporary paranormal investigators use a variety of tools and techniques to probe alleged paranormal activity. This includes the religious prayers and the use of sacred objects, the occult, Ouija boards, and technological electromagnetic field monitors and thermographic cameras. The use of these technological devices has grown right along with the advancement of technology. One of the most popular techniques is the use of still cameras to capture evidence of orbs or circular lights visible in pictures, though most paranormal experts would tell you the orbs are usually due to dust or other mundane causes. Another widely used investigatory method is measuring and documenting rapid temperature changes that don't have any obvious explanation. Cold spots are believed by many to be evidence of the ghostly activity. Electronic voice phenomena, or EVPs, are another type of anomaly that some interpret as proof of ghost. Unexplained sounds, including static, clicks, pops, interference, and even what sounds like murmured words can be made out if you listen closely enough to audio recordings from an investigation site. They all fall into this category. Critics note that despite the thousands of paranormal investigations undertaken, no indisputable proof of ghost has ever been offered. But for ghost hunters, the persistence of unexplained phenomena and a substantial number of alleged encounters between ghosts and the living demonstrate the need to keep on investigating. You know, one place that's often said to be haunted, and that I spent about a week on, was the Queen Mary. This luxury liner, once conscripted into service, has had many lives and seen a lot of deaths. It's known as the Royal Mail Ship, or the RMS Queen Mary. It's a luxurious British ocean liner operated by the famed Cunard White Star Line from 1936 to 1967. It's now permanently moored in Long Beach, California. And this ship is on the U.S. National Register of Historic Places. It serves as a hotel, a restaurant, and a museum. For paranormal investigators, though, the several hundred deaths linked to the ship and the substantial number of alleged ghost sightings make the Queen Mary's popular and important hunting ground. Stories have grown so popular that you can now take a ghost tour of the ship if you visit it, and they throw a Halloween party called Dark Harbor every year. Now, a few years ago, my wife had a meeting in Long Beach, and we stayed on the Queen Mary. And while she was at her meeting, I was exploring the ship, and they just turned me loose to go wherever. They gave me a guide to make sure I didn't disappear into the bowels of that ship. And always amazes me, people will call and hang up when you answer. Now, flush with the economic prosperity. Even worse than hanging up right before you answer is when you answer, they just breathe. Well, in 1930, the Cunard Steamship Company, one of Britain's most venerable shipping and transportation companies, began construction on hull number 534 in Clydebank, Scotland. Cunard hoped the massive ship would be able to successfully compete with the recently launched German ships SS Bremen and the Europa. These fast, luxurious ships threatened British position as a leader in transatlantic shipping. Within a year, though, the dire financial conditions caused by the Great Depression, which began in 1929, halted construction. And Cunard turned to the British government for a loan to complete the ship's construction. Britain's government approved the loan, but on the condition that the Cunard merged with its chief rival, the ailing White Star Line. Cunard's management approved, and shortly after the merger, construction resumed on the ship, whose name was kept strictly secret until it was launched. When it was launched on September 26, 1934, the ship, which cost nearly $350 million in 2020 dollars, bore the name Queen Mary after the sitting queen consort, Mary of Teck. The name represented something of a compromise, as Cunard usually selected names ending in a IA. For its ships, such as Lusitania, the White Star Line usually christened its ships with name ending in IC, such as Titanic. This name, therefore, broke the traditions of both somewhat newly merged companies. Now, the Queen Mary completed its first voyage, a transatlantic trip from Southampton, England to New York City in June of 1936. In August of that year, the Queen Mary briefly captured the coveted blue riband, an official accolade for the liner with the highest speed crossing the Atlantic. Though the ship's real attraction was its luxury, it featured two indoor swimming pools, an air-conditioned public room, and the first Jewish prayer room on an ocean liner. This was a clear dig at Nazi Germany's pervasive anti-Semitism. The outbreak of World War II in September 1939 briefly idled the Queen Mary and her sister ship, the Queen Elizabeth. In the following March, the Mary sailed to Australia, where it was converted into a troop ship. Queen Mary's gray paint earned her the nickname Gray Ghost, and it was during the war she earned the record for carrying the most passengers ever transported on a single vessel, 16,683. Queen Mary also had the honor of ferrying British Prime Minister Winston Churchill across the Atlantic several times for meetings with Allied officials. Of course, tragedy also would mar the Queen Mary's wartime service. On October 2, 1942, it struck the HMS Curacao, a light cruiser escorting the Queen Mary. Queen Mary was sailing in a zigzag pattern to make it less vulnerable to attack, while the Curacao sailed in a straight line. Queen Mary struck that smaller ship at full speed and sliced it in half. Over 300 men died, and later Admiralty Court decisions placed most of the blame on the Curacao's commander and the crew. After the war, the Queen Mary resumed its career as a luxury ocean liner. Now more opulent than ever after a post-war refit, Queen Mary returned to its status as an icon of transatlantic sailing. But of course, its days were numbered. 1958, British Overseas Airway Corporation completed the first transatlantic jet flight. Passengers could now travel between London and New York in a matter of hours rather than days, and the number of passengers on the transatlantic ships declined. 1967, after having completed her 1,000th Atlantic crossing, Queen Mary retired from active service and sailed for Long Beach, California. May of 1971, the heavily modified ship opened to tourists, and 7 months later, the Jacques Cousteau Museum of the Sea, a 100,000-square-foot attraction, opened to the public. Though it was plagued by a number of problems, and within a decade it closed. In fact, the ship's various owners have struggled to turn a profit in the decade since its arrival in Long Beach. And throughout this time, the Queen Mary's earned a reputation of being one of the most haunted places in the U.S., owing to the hundreds of deaths associated with that ship. In addition to the Curacao's crewmen, more than four dozen other people reported have died on the ship. Two crewmen, John McKenzie in 1942 and John Petter in 1966, were crushed to death by the ship's eerily named Door 13, which is located in the ship's massive shaft alley. Also, several legendary deaths. A woman named Dana supposedly murdered in cabin B-474, and somebody reported the name Jackie Torrance supposedly drowned in one of the ship's pools. There's little contemporary evidence supporting either of these deaths. However, these gruesome legends and the multiple reports of ghost sightings by staff and visitors alike led Time magazine to dub Queen Mary one of the world's 10 most haunted places. When I was exploring the pool area, we saw what appeared at first glance to be a face looking back at us from the darkened pool. We never found anybody. The young lady with me got me down to the pool level from the upper level we were standing on, and we searched not only the pool, but the dressing rooms attached to it. Turning from the Queen Mary, images of witches have appeared in history as evil women, often huddled over a cauldron or cursing the good and the pure. The real history of witches, though, is dark and often deadly. Images of witches have appeared in various forms throughout history, from evil, wart-nosed women huddling over the cauldron of boiling liquid to cackling beings wearing pointy hats and riding through the sky on broomsticks. In pop culture, the witch is often portrayed as a benevolent, nose-twitching suburban housewife like Samantha Stevens, or an awkward teenager learning to control her powers, or a trio of charmed sisters battling the forces of evil. Well, history, though, is dark and often, for the witch is deadly. The roots of witchcraft and the fear of witches go back to ancient times. though the image we associate with witches date to the Middle Ages. The Code of Hammurabi, a set of 282 laws promulgated in Babylon and Mesopotamia during King Hammurabi's reign, banned the practice of hexing people. The penalty for casting a spell was pretty stiff. According to Hammurabi's code, if a man has accused another of laying a spell on him but has not proved it, the accused shall plunge into the sacred river, and if the sacred river shall conquer him, the accused shall take possession of the accused house. If the sacred river shall show his innocence and he's saved, his accuser shall be put to death. He that plunged into the sacred river shall appropriate the house of him that accused him. Now, the Greeks, by contrast, were more accepting of witches and witchcraft. One of the earliest supposed witches was the Greek goddess Hecate, daughter of either Perseus and Asteria or Zeus and Demeter. Hecate was often associated with the Furies, winged female creatures that emerged from the drops of blood shed by the Greek god Uranus. According to Homer's poem, the Iliad, the Furies, who live in the underworld, exact vengeance on men whosoever has sworn a false oath. And that would take out half the people in El Paso. Meanwhile, the Greeks at this time associated Hecate with witchcraft and black magic. And like a later popular depictions of witches are ugly and old, the Orphic hymns, composed sometime between the 2nd century B.C. and the 2nd century A.D., describe Hecate as a lovely dame of earthly, watery, and celestial frame. Sepulchral on a saffron veil, laced with dark ghosts that wander through the shade. The 3rd century B.C. epic poem, Argonautica, written by Apollonius of Rhodes and detailing the adventures of Jason and the Argonauts, references Hecate instructing mortals in sorcery and teaching them how to use herbs to concoct poisons and potions. The hero of the story, Jason, marries Medea, a priestess of Hecate, after her magic saves him several times, though she's a feared and somewhat treacherous creature. Though the Greeks viewed witchcraft as a force that could be used for good or evil, there were certainly other cultures that took a more negative view. The general disapproval of witchcraft evident in Hammurabi's code is also visible in the Old Testament, which recognizes its existence, prohibits the Israelites from practicing it. Exodus chapter 22, verse 18 puts the matter quite plainly. As translated in the King James Version, God instructed the Israelites, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. Other versions link sorcery to women, translating the passage as you shall not allow a woman who practices this sorcery to live and put to death any woman who practices magic. In Deuteronomy chapter 18, verses 10 through 12, the prohibition of witchcraft is repeated. And the text implies that part of the reason is because sorcery is a form of idolatry and because it's a practice associated with non-Jews. Thou shalt not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or daughter to pass through the fire, or use divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter of familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all that do these things are an abomination to the Lord, and because these are the abominations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee. But despite these prohibitions, the Old Testament makes clear that Jews sometimes turn to sorcerers for assistance. The best known instance is Saul consulting the witch of Endor, described in the chapter on ghosts, but there are others. In Chronicles, King Manasseh is criticized for leading Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to err because he, among other things, used enchantments and used witchcraft and dealt with familiar spirits and with wizards. As Christianity emerged from Judaism, it too forbade witchcraft. According to the Acts of the Apostles, the sons of a Jewish high priest went around driving spirits out of possessed people in the name of Jesus. In one instance, the possessed man leapt on him and overcame him and prevailed against him. Word of this spread far and wide, and other local sorcerers brought their scrolls together and burned them publicly, becoming followers of Jesus. In another instance, also recorded in the Acts of the Apostles, a Samaritan sorcerer named Simon is so impressed by the miracles one of the apostles able to perform in Jesus' name, he immediately abandons witchcraft and becomes a Christian. The message in the New Testament is clear. Not only is witchcraft forbidden, the power of God acting through Jesus is superior to all forms of sorcery.
In the Middle Ages, Christian disdain for witchcraft and sorcery hardened into persecution, in large part because the Catholic Church was stronger and had clarified its dogma over the preceding centuries. During the 4th century, Catholicism established itself as the official religion of the Roman Empire and defined a coherent set of beliefs expressed as the Nicene Creed and identified the books that comprised the Bible. Following the fall of the Roman Empire, the Catholic Church became the dominant religious, cultural, and intellectual institution in what became the empire's western half. Conflict over heresy divided the church over the next several centuries, and some pagan beliefs continued to exist side by side with Catholicism for centuries, forming ideas on saints, holidays, and rituals. Yet the Catholic Church did not impose a total ban on magic. It is true that as the church consolidated its power and position in the late Roman Empire, it encouraged converts to burn their spell books. Now, this was more about routing out and destroying the last remnants of paganism than about Catholic opposition to magic. In fact, the Catholic Church was not uniformly opposed to all occult practices at all. Some Christian theologians believed that spells and divinations worked, and they divided the magic realm into two categories, natural and demonic magic. Church tolerated natural magic, which included medicinal potions and spells, arguing that such magic came from God. Demonic magic can also be described as black magic by contrast, and it was supposed it came from demons or the devil and was defined by the use of magic for selfish or immoral purposes. That attitude, though, didn't last. In the 10th century, the Canon Episcopi was written, describing the folk beliefs and customs of a portion of what is today France. According to the Episcopi, alleged magical acts of witches were delusions or fantasies, but belief in witchcraft was a heresy and justified exclusion from receiving sacraments or even excommunication. The Episcopi declares that bishops and their officials must labor with all their strength so that the pernicious art of sorcery and malefice, which was invented by the devil, is eradicated from their districts. And if they find a man or woman follower of this wicked sect, reject them foully, disgraced from the parish. So here we have ordinary men who in their own right claim to be blessed by God, able to decide who can be part of the church and who can't. In the ancient world, witches could either be of either gender, but by the Middle Ages, witchcraft was increasingly identified strongly with women. Approximately 2 centuries after the Episcopi's appearance, a canon lawyer in Bologna, Italy, named Gratian, compiled the canon law of the Catholic Church in a document entitled the Decretum Gratiani and incorporated the Episcopi. The Decretum Gratiani remained an important source of canon law well into the 20th century. Even as late as the 12th century, depictions of witches and witchcraft weren't totally negative, even in Christian cultures. Around 1150 AD, a British cleric named Godfrey of Monmouth composed an epic poem entitled Vita Merlini, Life of Merlin. The poem contains the first explicit mention of one of English's most famous witches, Morgana Le Fay. She's one of 9 magical sisters living on the island of Avalon. A beautiful woman, Le Fay is capable of shape-shifting and flying, uses her powers to revive the legendary King Arthur. Later in the 12th century, the French poet Cratien de Troyes wrote the romance poem Eric and Enide, which includes Le Fay, who's depicted as a benevolent healer. In the 13th century, though, multiple authors presented Le Fay as a sinister temptress, culminating with her becoming King Arthur's nemesis. By the 15th century, English author Thomas Malory's Le Morte d'Arthur, The Death of Arthur, stripped Le Fay of any noble qualities. The change in Le Fay's character reflected the Catholic Church's increasingly aggressive attempt to stamp out witchcraft, part of a larger crusade against heresy. Beginning in the late 12th century, the Church created a series of inquisitions and tribunals to investigate and punish heretics. The first of these, the so-called Episcopal Inquisition, took place between 1184 and 1230 and was aimed at 2 specific heretical movements, Catharism, Waldensianism. Originally administered on the local level, in 1230 Pope Gregory IX appointed several inquisitors to travel throughout the Catholic world and administer investigations. It was an attempt to systemize inquisitorial procedures and punishments. In 1258, Pope Alexander IV issued a papal bull or a public decree that church inquisitors were not to investigate witchcraft unless it was clear that such cases involved heresy. This was an exception to the trend of defining witchcraft as simply another form of heresy to be defeated. More typical was influential theologian, philosopher, and priest Thomas Aquinas' statement that sorcery and magic was sinful and heretical. And Aquinas' influence over the church was very profound. Pope John XXII took an especially hard line against witches, and 1320 instructed inquisitors in southern France to proceed against witches and sorcerers by whatever means available, which are canonically assigned to you concerning the proceedings against heretics. 6 years later, he officially declared witchcraft a heresy, making it a target of the Inquisition's wrath. So here we have a man who has styled himself as God's shepherd, deciding that based on his personal preferences, witchcraft was evil. It wasn't until the 15th century, though, that witch hunting really came into its own. Beginning in 1428, a series of witch trials that eventually claimed about 400 lives began in the Valais region of current-day Switzerland. For 30 years, the region had an office of the Inquisition that investigated Waldensians. Summer of 1428, this morphed into investigating claims of witchcraft, which several local notables demanded it. Allegedly, witches are flying through the air on chairs, transformed into wolves and attacking their neighbors' cows, even the bodies of children. Other establishing procedures. A person could be arrested when three or four neighbors accused him or her of being a witch. If accused by five or more people, the alleged witch was not only arrested, but liable to be tortured, sometimes put to death. Those convicted of witchcraft are executed, usually by being pushed into a burning stake. By this time, witchcraft had been primarily associated with women for a couple of hundred years. Aquinas had viewed witchcraft as primarily, though not entirely, a female activity tied to women's sexuality. While the letter written at Pope John XXII's request distinguished between sorcerers, men, and witches, women, 1437, and as the Valais witchcraft trials were going on, an anonymous inquisitor wrote Eros Graziorum, which described in detail the black magic rituals of alleged witches. This document repeats many of the charges leveled against witches in Valais, particularly charges of cannibalism, but also described in lurid detail the ways in which the devil seduces Christian women and turns them to witchcraft. About that same time, a lay magistrate named Claude Deloison issued his own writing that recounted supposedly nefarious methods of temptation used by female witnesses, witches. As a result of these and other outrages on the basis of canon law, Deloison claimed the right of civil authorities to intervene in those cases and involve corporal punishment and the confiscation of property of the convicted. In other words, if there's money out there, we want it. And on that note, we've come to the end of today's show. When we come back, we'll be talking more about the paranormal. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.